This trip, like every other trip, is completely different, very unique, and in many ways more productive than than some of our trips, but only because it's in a totally different way. The team that went forth, in the top left-hand corner is Kim. He is the director of Builders Without Borders. I am not going to say much about him other than it's just him and his partner down there in the bottom corner who run it. But he is going to be our guest speaker for the Faith Promise Rally this year. And so I'm so excited about that. Lori, unfortunately, was only able to spend a day with us because she had a family emergency and had to go back home. The other members, you see everybody there you recognize, except in the top right corner is my Aunt Jan. She is my idol. She is 78 years old, and she wants to go again when we go back in 2 years. She has boundless energy, and more importantly, she has an amazing love. This was not her first trip to Haiti. She has helped build churches there. And it's people like you, like members of Calvary, that made all of these trips possible. This year, I was greatly bothered by wanting to do fundraisers. And it bothers me to do that because I hate to come to you time after time after time and ask you to, you know, go buy hamburgers and Culver's. And I appreciate all the places in the public that allow us to do that. But we only get such a small portion. And when Joel mentioned the envelope idea, I prayed about it, and I knew in my heart that's what I wanted to do because I want you to feel God's call on your heart, to give what you feel called to give, and every penny of it get used. This year we had, not only did we have enough money from a couple previous fundraisers to pay for the things for the garden and for the eye clinic, but I was able to take $2,173 with us in cash. And I got the last four from outside friends and family on Friday, the last four donations, the Friday before we left, and I emailed Lori and I said, we have all this money. And Phyllis and I had been talking while packing and said, she said, well, could we buy a goat or something? But I hear they do that in other countries. So I said, well, we'll find out. So when I emailed Lori, I said, we have all this money. What can we do with this? Can we buy a goat or a few chickens? She said, oh my goodness, wait till you see what we can do. And so I'm not going to talk anymore. Oh, wait a minute. I do have a couple pictures. This is the lovely hotel we stayed at. Kim believes that we don't need to see only the bad side of Haiti, but in order for Haiti to grow, they need jobs. And one of the greatest ways for them is tourism. And so he wanted us to see the beauty that Haiti has to offer. This was the view from our where we ate breakfast every morning. It's a beautiful place. And he also believes that, and what we really appreciate, is that we survive better down there after a hot day when we can come home and have a shower and go in air conditioning. And in this hotel, we actually had electricity almost all the time. So it was really nice. This is the building that the children live in. It's a little bit longer than that. It's very simplistic. It has a boys' dorm, a girls' dorm, a common living place. And then it has Franzo and Anise's quarters and a kitchen, and that's all there is to it. What they're doing there is getting to draw water up from the cistern. That's how we water the garden. That's how they get their daily water. And that's how they flush the toilet. And fortunately, we sweat so much we never had to go to the bathroom while we were there. So we didn't have to use it and go get water. And these are just a few of the beautiful, beautiful faces. The privilege of being there and being on the compound every day, all day, was that we got to just love on these children. And they just loved us so much back. It is a privilege to have been there. Phyllis, if you'd like to come. You want us to use a hand? Okay. Oh, wait, did you have that? You did, yep. I'm sorry. Would we have less static if we used a handheld? Okay.
Is that better? Okay. I don't know how many of you know this, but I have wanted to go to Haiti for many years. and things just kept getting in the way. We had childcare issues, and then we had knee replacements and all sorts of things, and I was so excited to go, and I was all ready to go last year, and they canceled it. So this year I was like, am I going to get to go or not? But I'm so glad I did. It's like Pam said, it's the most amazing experience. One of the things that we did was an eye clinic. And when I got ready to go, I had no idea what an eye clinic was. And I was kind of, you know, I don't know. But then we met Kim Reed. Kim was our team leader. And he just walked us through everything. It was so smooth and everything. And what he did is he set up this clinic at the orphanage. Our clinic, per se, was a table outside of the orphanage. Our waiting room was a couple of benches under a tree. But we had glasses that were donated. Now, the first thing that we did is Kim would take and he would evaluate the people that came to see if they needed like surgery or things that we couldn't fix with glasses. And if they did, he would take their name and he would follow through on how to get them some sort of care for their eyes. Our job was to test the eyes of the people that came. So we had a help, is it Patrick? That was his name,
Patrick.
Right? Patrick. He did the initial part. He and Jan would do the distance vision. It took two of them, one to tell the people what to do. And Patrick was our interpreter because we didn't speak their language and they didn't speak ours. But they got the long distance vision to see if they needed correction for long distance vision. And then we had set up at the table. Places glasses, and we had charts that we looked at to determine whether or not they needed vision for close-up and what their prescription might be. To get started, Kim just told people that there was going to be an eye clinic. We didn't have TV or radio announcements or anything like that, but the people just started coming. We sat and we did this for, we didn't do it the first day, we did it the next 3 days. We were only supposed to be doing it for, only supposed to be doing our mission for 3 days, and then we were supposed to have some free time. We gave up that free time because we were so engrossed in what we were doing, we didn't want to stop. After we checked their vision, we would find them glasses that would fit. When we determined that they would, what their vision was, and we found glasses for them. These people saw clearly for the first time in many years. And it was just such a blessing to see the look on their faces when they could see. Now, I personally have worn glasses almost all my life, since I was a little child. And I cannot imagine what it must be like not being able to see clearly. They were so grateful and so happy. And we had people from young children, their elementary school age, all the way up to the elderly. My very most memorable moment was we had this one elderly lady come, and her vision was very poor. And we finally decided, you know, we finally figured out what was the best correction for her with the donated glasses that we had. But before she was completely satisfied that this was the right fit for her, she pulled out her Bible. She had to make sure that she could read God's word before she left there. I still get goosebumps every time I think about her. All she wanted to do was to be able to read her Bible. We were able to provide glasses for approximately 55 people. And Kim was also had about five or six people that he was following up for more specialized care. When I was thinking about my trip, I was thinking about all these wonderful things that I was going to teach people while I was there, and all these wonderful words of wisdom that would just flow from my mouth to these people, you know? Well, the thing of it is, I learned more than they did. And I'm going to tell you some of the things, or random things that I learned. One of them was that you're never too old to serve the Lord. I thought I was too old to go traipsing around to places like Haiti. People told me that. But then I met Jan, Pam Santa, she told you about. She's 10 years older than me, and I tell you what a dynamo that woman is. She carried the large pails of water, from the cistern to the garden, because, you know, when we garden, we have a hose, and we have this, and we have that. We had some hand tools, and we had buckets that we could carry the water from, and we had to climb up the hill. And I want to tell you, people, it was hot. It was very hot. But she did that. And one of the most amazing things that she did is she connected with these kids so much, especially the teenage girls. These teenage girls loved Jan, and she loved them. It was just amazing. She's just an inspiration to me. Another thing that I learned is you need to take time to make new friends. No matter where you are, no matter how old you are, you need to make new friends. We made so many friends down there. The children in the orphanage, the caregivers, we made all sorts of friends. Bob made special friends too. This little guy wanted his shoelaces all the time. We made young friends, and some that were not so young. And Bob was really good at making four-legged friends. Really good. Another thing I learned is that the roads we travel are often rough. But if we stay on the path that God leads us, we'll arrive at our destination. Our transportation, most of the time, was an old, beat-up pickup truck that had benches on the sides. It was covered, and it had a bar to hang on to, and you needed that bar. Those roads were so rough, and it was so hard, that I think that I'm probably an inch shorter from the jarring that we went through. But we arrived safely, and we were able to do what God wanted us to. I also learned that girls are girls no matter where to go. One of the things I noticed when we got there is these children, all of them, were very clean, very neat. Their hair was done. And one day when we were there, all the older girls were doing the younger girls' hair. They love doing hair. They couldn't leave our hair alone. They love to fix hair. One of the things that we did when we weren't working in the garden or we weren't working on the chicken coop or those other things, they had a lot of corn that they had harvested and they needed it shelled. So one of the things that we did when we were resting in the shade is we would take big pans of this corn and we would shell it. Well, when we would sit down, these little girls would come and they would mess with our hair. They loved our hair. They especially loved people with blonde hair. One day when we were doing the corn, one little girl decided that these corn cobs would look really cool in my hair. And they taught Des and I how to do corn rolls. I learned too that you have to take time for fun. When we got there, Kim said that yes, he wanted us to do all the things that we had planned on doing. He wanted us to do the garden, and he wanted us to do the eye clinic, and he wanted us to do whatever we were going to do with the goats. But he said the most important thing that he wanted us to do was to interact, to build relationships with these children. We had brought some bubbles, we brought balloons, we brought frisbees, we brought cars. And these we use for activities to engage the children. And it was so much fun. The kids really, really loved the Frisbee. And Mr. Bob was right there doing those Frisbees with them. He did a wonderful job with that. Another thing that I learned, that I already knew, I thought, as a teacher, I know that kids like to learn. So what I do, I teach. And I teach underprivileged children. And I know how they love to learn. But I have never seen kids that wanted to learn like these kids do. This is their classroom. It consists of a dirt floor, tarps that were used to bring supplies in from the earthquake, that makes up the walls and their ceiling. And their only audiovisual, only materials they have are chalkboards and chalk. They have little books to work out of. Now in Haiti, you have to pay to go to school, so a lot of kids don't get to go to school. This particular school was a free one. The teachers don't get paid. The kids walk there, and yet every day they're there. This broke my heart. This will be the one thing that I remember most from Haiti, and the one thing that I will work hardest to try to remedy is to get these kids an education so that they don't have to do it like this. One day, as we were sitting there, I noticed this little boy. We had brought a bunch of stuff down, some food and some things, and someone had given this little boy one of these little packages of cookies. You know, like you put in a kid's lunch. These kids have nothing. Yet when someone gave this to him, before he ate it, he went and found his little friend and shared it. That's the lesson for all of us. We need to share what we have. Nobody asked him to share. How many of our kids would do that? It humbled me, and it just, like I said, I get goosebumps when thinking about it. Finally, you need to always take time to praise the Lord. Every night we were there, we had devotions. And one night, the children wanted to sing for us, and I want to share that with you.
Okay, I was not in charge, but I helped with the chicken coop, and when I heard that we were going to build one, I thought, well, it's not a big deal, but as big as it was, it was a lot more than I expected. But here I am on the right with the straw hat, and again, this is the vehicle that Phyllis talked about, and I guess I was amazed. In that truck, they had the 14-foot pieces of tin for the roof. They had about a dozen 1x6 boards. They had 12 6x6 posts and about 20 bags of concrete, and that all fit in that little truck, so I was just amazed. So just in case rumor has it that I was there to supervise, I was doing some work, so that's me, and I was a little wobbly at that. Let's see, we'll kind of go through these. This is a pile of rock that they had crushed down to make help make the concrete. That was a bigger pile. It took them about a month with hammers to knock these bigger rocks into small rocks. And that's what they used to mix the concrete. And it was kind of neat. Anybody that's done concrete before is that it was all, there wasn't a cement truck that pulled in and dropped the cement off, but it was mixed in different stages of wetness as they went through. It was a two-day process. And they started young in Haiti. This little boy was kind of fun because when we did the garden, every time I put a shovel or a something down, he had it. I had to go find it. Here you see he stole the shovel and was mixing cement. There were six people that helped take the cement from this spot down to where the cement was laid. And this is the delivery trucks. We had one broken down wheelbarrow and we had five gallon buckets. I did this for about 3 hours and then finally I went and sat on the shade tree and then of course the rest of the guys continued to do it. A couple of men were a lot older than I was. I don't know how old they were, but when we got all done after, you know, they worked for another 2-3 hours. He was doing a jig down by because the cement was done. These guys got $6 a day and were happy for the work. So this is the area that they had cleared. The holes were dug with a frost bar and by hand. And now they set the posts for the shell of the building. And they had, you can't see it real well, but here's a better picture. They filled a lot of it with big rock to help take up some of the area for the concrete. The boards and the frame is going up. And here's the concrete, so you can see it's really a pretty large area. I was thinking it was 14 by 30, so that's a lot of buckets of concrete. What's she doing in there? That's a little Haitian baby. No, that's my granddaughter. Nice to look at anyways. Then we had a bricklayer come in and lay brick up about 2.5-3 feet. And of course the floor has been poured. And again, the shell going around. There we have some power tools, a handsaw. There was a limited amount of people that could work. I think we had two hammers and two saws and a couple screwdrivers. So, but he hired local Haitians to do the work. And so they were happy for the work. And again, Kim's vision for Haiti is not only to bring the gospel, but a lot of times that comes through supplying physical needs. And so he's got a good grasp on that. So here's some of the work being done. I guess we missed one. Anyways, word got out that we were going to buy some chickens, and before you know it, here's the chicken delivery. the coop wasn't done yet. Believe it or not, there are 92 chickens in those little things. So, and again, so we had to build, if you see the little box on the right, bottom right, that was what we had to build. With the extra brick that were needed to be used eventually to keep the chickens in because they were going all over the place. And there you see they're semi-quarantined from running. There's one getting out, and so we have, there's not a picture of Pam and Phyllis, but they were finally labeled chicken tenders because they were trying to get the chickens back, keep the chickens in. Of course, there's one that got away. I don't know if we ever did find him, he got away. There's the finished product. It got screened in over the top. It's pretty good size. The idea for this is to have it divided in half eventually. They'll get 90-some chickens every 3 to 4 months. Be able to have this, the one half of that will be for the younger chickens. The more mature ones will be in the other half. And then every 3 to 4 months, they'll get another batch of chickens. So this has enabled them to not only be more self-sufficient, but also to sell some at market to raise money for other needs. So it's really, when I thought of a chicken coop, okay, you know, well, this is a big deal for them. And here the door got put on. I'm not sure where they found that door, but it's a nice Swedish blue. So I don't know if that'll be the door that'll stay in that spot or not. But there's the goat that Pam had mentioned, or Phyllis, I guess. And again, we were able to buy a goat. A cow, all these chickens,
four goats,
okay. And so they have milk for goat cheese, I believe. But again, we're helping them to be more self-sufficient. and be able to sell that, some of that in the market. And as Phyllis said, we like to have fun. We went one of the days, we went down to the seashore and had hot dogs and so forth, and had the kids timed up for them to play, and balloons were a big hit, so we did spend some time doing that. And of course, Frisbee. I'm not real good at Frisbee, but we had a lot of fun with the Frisbee. And by the end of the day, the Frisbee was a bowl for the dog to eat out of. So I'm not sure if they're still using it or not. But anyways, so that was the chicken coop. It's just amazing the hard work that they do. And again, I think that something that I learned was the fact that just like here, Jesus was able to bring a spiritual side of life by going and meeting people's physical needs, and I think that's what Kim has in mind. One day they all went into one of the stores with the kids and bought cookies and so forth, and so Kim kind of walked me around the area that they have, and with the idea of bringing a high school, to build a high school that not only for the orphanage but for the community of Raymond. He also would like to empower some of the farmers up in the mountains to buy coffee trees. And so instead of having someone come in and buy a bunch of land and owning all this, to have the farmers own their own property, have their own business, basically, and be able to funnel that money back into the economy. So he's got a lot of good ideas. And again, it all comes back to us being able to share in their lives and also to share Jesus with them. And also the last thing, I think, I've only been to Haiti twice. The first time was a real cultural, shock for me, to see how poor someone can be. And that's what's unfortunate and why Kim is so adamant about being able to provide opportunities, because a lot of these kids, if they do go to school, graduate, there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. There's no jobs. And so with a school, some of them can be teachers and so forth. But I guess this time what Pam helped me to realize also is that I feel almost guilty having what I have, but God has blessed me for that reason, is to be able to help give. So those are a couple things that I learned. Okay, I think that's it.
So one of the things we did, like I said, was kindergarten. I don't have any pictures of the first spot of the land, but the first day we spent just clearing the land. There's a lot of brush. And luckily we had one of the guys came to work, used a hoe and got most of it chopped up for us once we got a lot of the plants pulled. And so then we put in watermelon, honeydew melons, onions, peppers, beans, cucumbers. And we had a lot of help the whole time. Anywhere we were, the kids wanted to be, and they wanted to help. And so we got empty bottles, and they were watering all the plants for us. And we got to teach the kids how to plant, which was, it was great not only for them to learn that, but it also helped later in the week. One of the devotions we did was on the sower and the seed. So now the kids had a visual of being able to plant and knowing what goes into the planting process. And a couple of the older kids were actually planting rows by themselves by the time we finished. And there's a finished garden and all of our helpers. And then every day after the morning in the garden, we took down our lunch down to the beach. And some of us ended up in the water every day, which was fun. And one of the little girls, her name was Daphne, she had just come to the orphanage 2 weeks before. And she was really quiet. She doesn't talk a whole lot. And she would only go in the water with us if someone was there with her. She wasn't used to that yet. The other kids were just, you know, all in the water. So it was great to get to know her. And there's Kim and one of the little boys picking beans that Franco and Denise had planted corn and beans before. So they were getting beans for dinner. And there's our free time, there's shelling corn and getting our hair done. We did a lot of that. And blowing bubbles, just getting to spend time with the kids. And I learned a lot in Haiti. Most of the things I already knew, but I just needed to be reminded of them. And the first one is that joy doesn't come from our circumstances. Joy comes from knowing who we are. And by today's standards, these kids have nothing. Most of them don't even, they don't have toys. They don't have, and there's some of the few fortunate. They have a roof over their head. They have food to eat. And they mentioned going to the store, it's called, it's an American store. It's about the size of a large gas station, convenience store. And we took 9 or 10 kids with us that day. And so if you think taking your kids to the store is hard, we had 10 kids all on their own favorite kind of cookies. But not one of them complained with the selection we ended up with. And these kids are the most joyful kids you will ever meet. And their happiness doesn't depend on their stuff. And it doesn't even depend on family. Because all of these kids are either orphans or they've been abandoned by their families. But they've been sort of adopted into this family here at Kenbay Pen. And they're loved. And I can't help but think that part of their joy comes from remembering where they've been. Two of the kids, a brother and sister, had come not too long ago to the orphanage. They'd been found on the side of the road. And they'd been part of another orphanage that had been shut down because the church backing them backed out of supporting the orphanage. And they were trying to put these kids in other places, and these were just two kids that they hadn't found a home for, so they just left them. And Kim and Franzo had been up in the hills looking for something, and they found these kids on the side of the road and brought them there. They've been rescued from terrible situations and brought into a family. And it should be the same for us. Our joy shouldn't come from our possessions, our financial security, or even our family. It comes from, these things can give us happiness, but they can't give us true joy. Our true joy comes from knowing who we are, that we are the children of God, that we've been rescued and adopted into His family. We know we're His, and we know we're loved. And the second thing I was reminded of is that love is its own language. I was nervous about going to Haiti since I don't speak Creole or French, and the majority of the younger kids don't speak any English. And I was worried that that communication barrier would hinder us from really reaching out to the kids. And it was a little frustrating now and then when one of the kids was trying to talk to you and you had to go find an older kid to help you translate. But the majority of the time, it didn't matter. Hugs and laughter are the same in any language. And we were able to play with them and do all kinds of things that didn't stop us from having a great time. God can use you to love other people, whether you speak their language or not, as long as you're willing.
I do have to digress just slightly, because you have to imagine this. They're sitting on the ground trying to dig holes and put in the cucumbers and whatnot, and this older gentleman is going to do the furrows now for us. And up he goes. This guy's working like a steam shovel with this one little thing. And here's Phyllis sitting on the ground. Does he stop? No. He goes around her. Next time he's coming back this way, and Phyllis is in a different spot. He goes around her. I would love to see this in about 6 weeks when most of this is grown up, because every one of these furrows goes like this at some point where Phyllis is sitting. It was hysterical. But we could have never, ever done it like they could. We don't have the capacity to work that hard in that heat. And I always tell them, do not tell me how hot it is here. I don't want to know, because then I would melt. But let me tell you, it's hot in the shade, even doing nothing. But it was an amazing trip. And we did get a couple chances to be in the community, and one was the school La Joie, and it was called The Joy. And that's the school that Phyllis mentioned. And the principal came to us, who is working for free, and three out of his five teachers, two.
You only had two teachers
out of the five originals left. Three of them left because there was no funding. The churches had pulled out their funding. And so these two teachers and the principal worked for free. And so they came and met us at the hotel, and Phyllis and I and the rest of us have decided we're going to try and make that our personal mission to see if we can get some kind of grants and things like that for them, because we want to help in any way we can, and this was a true, true need. Then also we got a chance to experience a dance troupe developed by a Haitian who actually did choreography in New York and had a dance troupe there, and he came, and these are street kids, and he gave them something that they could do. They did about a half-hour program of traditional dances, and it was just absolutely amazing to watch these kids. And there was the resident turkey. We don't know who the turkey belonged to, but the turkey loved the motorcycle. And so It was an amazing trip. And I am so thankful that Calvary supports us like you do. And there is a newsletter, which all three of us forgot, left it at home, and then I'll put it out on the bulletin board. And it's a newsletter from Builders Without Borders that shows a few scenes of us. It did call us Calvary Christian Missions, but that's all right. We'll forgive them. And it mentions on there, one of the things that they're doing is they're trying to raise funds to get a vehicle. This is their only mode of transportation right now for the kids. And so they will moto taxi them back and forth to school. And they would like to get a vehicle big enough to at least take the younger kids to school. And so there are always opportunities. But pray. That's what we ask mostly, pray. Pray for the workers. Pray for the harvest. If the Lord is willing, I'll be going back again in 2 years, and anybody that wants to go is welcome to go, because no matter what job we do, there's always a job you can do. And so it was amazing. And this I can't remember what they called the goat. I forgot. This was the first goat, and we tried our best to get a picture. That goat was not going to cooperate. And this is not all the children. When they made the move into their property from the city, they lost many of the older kids. Many of them did not want to leave city life. They moved in with other relatives, with friends. Unfortunately, a couple of the girls moved in with boyfriends. But that opened the door for Franzo and Anise. Anise is the one on the left, and she's Franzo's wife. Franzo is next to the guy in the green. And they love on these children as much as they can and provide for them as best they can. But it's a huge, huge task. And poor Franzo, he's like most people are walking by a stray puppy. He sees a child that's without a home, and he can't stop but take him. Kim says every time he turns around, he's saying, Kim, I happen to walk upon, and he finds another child. He can't stop. And we are so privileged to be able to help them with this dream. And so, with that, I thank you again from the bottom of our hearts for allowing us this privilege.